kind, gentle creatures that can only hurt one another by accident. He says, then there are wolves. The wolves will feed on the sheep. They're the sociopaths. They're the criminals. He says, and then there are sheepdogs. The sheep are a little leery of the sheepdog. He wanders around, checks the perimeter every night, and barks at the moon. He would never turn his teeth on the flock, but he yearns for a righteous battle. When the wolf comes around, nothing else will do, and the entire flock is sitting there trying to hide behind one lonely sheepdog as he faces down the wolves. We're talking about a creature who is capable of confronting and dealing with combat and sustaining themselves across the long haul. The goal becomes to be a sheepdog, to be a warrior, to be the one that is ready to respond to the threats when the time arises.
Hello and welcome to Blue Justice Radio. I'm your host, David, and as always, Blue Justice Radio brought to you by Lesma and only on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, so it's Friday, or as it will now be known as Amanda's Fun Day Friday. Should be an exciting show. Let me just start off with something, though. Unfortunately, we've had a couple of developments. So I'm going to do my best to explain this as easily as possible. It sucks to report this. As you all know, continued attacks against officers. We've lost 18, which is insane. That's what we've lost, and that's only of human officers. Our canine friends, their numbers increase as well. Posted yesterday about one that we lost due to drowning in regards to a perp search on the 9th. And we nearly lost his handler as well. Luckily, we didn't. But it's a shame that we even lost the canine, especially over a piece of garbage. Case in point is it's out there. Our men and women are fighting this. Our dogs are fighting this. Our horses are out there on the front line. They're all symbolic of the shield on their chest or their saddle or their choke collar. And they're out there to fight the good fight and protect us all, protect our families, and protect our way of life. That being said, very disturbed by the fact that an agreement that was made with Smashburger seems to be getting reneged on their part. It's not the first time that a company or a politician, for that matter, has reneged as things kind of get quiet. When their incident happened here in New York against the NYPD, they were quick to take action. They were quick to take action and contact us within hours from us reaching out to them. An outpour of negative comments and heat forced their hand. They reached out to us. They were very good with us. Unfortunately, at a corporate level, once things start getting better, people seem to forget. It takes a side burner. Now, some organizations may not give a fuck, but unfortunately for them, I do. So, I'm asking everybody to reach out to them through email, through telephone, through their Facebook page, and blast the fuck out of them. They need to be reminded that they fucked up. They need to be reminded that they need to be accountable. They need to be reminded that they have not provided full disclosure as promised into their handling. Yes, it was handled, but there was a lot more to be done, and it's just not being done. I, for one, will not sit idly by. These corporations, and it's not just coming from me. There's been articles written in Time. There's been articles reading in that's been written in Entrepreneur Magazine and several other publications, both in print and in digital media, in regards to corporations responsibility to law enforcement in America and the war on cops, which, by the way, the DOJ says does not exist. So please, I beg you all, force their hand by letting them know you remember. Until they have to suffer some accountability, we're not going to change this, and it continues. Just keep that in mind. Okay, with that, let's get on with our Fun Day Friday. I know Amanda has been receiving messages from Ken Dye about some stories he wanted to share. Amanda, do we have Ken on the line? Is he ready to share these stories we've all been waiting for?
Yes, we have him on the line, and as far as being ready, that's him.
That's up to him. All right, well, let's get Ken on the air. Ken, how are you this morning?
Hey, good morning. Where have you been? You've been absent.
You know, I'm here and there and everywhere, sir. I have no excuses. I'm just busy working and trying to get things done here. I could tell you my absences are all Lesma related. But yeah, I got some things I'm working on, and hopefully good things, and we'll see what happens. But I've been filled in that you have some comical stories for us. Is
that
correct?
And I challenged Pittsburgh David, your nemesis,
yes,
to come up with, and he keeps flipping me off on Facebook that he does have three. He's thrown down the gauntlet. But
nice.
So
we're going to get a real competition going here.
To tag on to your stuff that you were talking about initially, David, I cannot remember all the shootings involving police officers ever. It's just astronomical. And I think you've seen the one about some copper up, I want to say Wisconsin or Minnesota or someplace, where he goes up and he does everything right. He puts his hand on the trunk as he's going up, and he stands close to the car and behind the driver, and the guy fires a sawed-off shotgun out the window, misses him, and he goes back to the car, chases him down, and one of our canine partners grabs the guy. It just typically excellent police work. And, I was real proud of the guy.
I'm trying to think of that video. Yeah, no, I'm here. I'm trying to think of that video. That was, trying to remember. I saw the video. Where was that took place? It was a great job, but I can't remember where it was. And the other, I think I saw it on, you know who I saw it on? I saw it on the webpage Police. The Facebook page Police, they had put a video up. Obviously, I don't think they were the originals because it came from the department. But it's a panicking trend within law enforcement lately. I think what was it the other day? In Chicago, somebody opened up on a patrol car there doing a perp search. Then you had San Bernardino. We had them with the terrorist attack, but only 2 days ago they had one of their community outreach cars while it was driving around came under fire. I mean, it's just insane. And then, of course, you have Jacksonville, Florida, where this 19-year-old punk opened up fire on the officer with his kid in the car. This is just – it's insane. It really is.
It's crazy, and
absolutely.
Before we get into the funny stuff, which keeps police work kind of the glue that holds police work together is the humor. But in St. Louis, last Sunday, two guys, a car that had invalid plates. The plates were on a different car, and they approached the car and spoke to the people inside the car, and it was a family going to church, and it was very professionally handled. They went back to their car, and 2 hours later, here's the Black Lives Matter crew out in front of police headquarters, you know, demanding this and demanding that, and saying that these officers pointed their guns at the two kids. Well, nothing was further from the truth. they immediately pull the in-car video, put it on TV and all the media, and it just took the wind right out of their sails. And I write in my blog, Cops Perspective, why bother, you know? And if it hadn't have been for an in-car video, those two coppers would have, you know, been up on internal affairs and claims and counterclaims. And, oh, God, what a miserable environment to be a police officer. They're just
treated
like...
Let me ask you something, though. Being that your eyes on that, I have to ask you this. You know, were there any charges filed against anybody in regards to the false report being made? And if not, why not? Because that seems to be the big issue here. I saw the same thing in Texas where some girl claims she was just driving from mama's house back to campus, and she was stopped by cops.
I remember that one, David.
Stop, gunpoint. Like the cops said, 8 miles you drove without stopping. We had our lights and sirens on. You didn't give a fuck. You didn't call 911. You just stopped when you stopped. You passed plenty of places that were lit that you could have stopped. All this story. I saw the video. I had put it up in the room. Activist comes forward, racist cops, blah, blah, blah. Police show the video. The news reporter looks at the video, confronts the activist, and lets the activist ramble, and then says, more or less, you're full of it because I saw the video, and that's not at all how it happened or went down. You're not even close. And with that, he goes, oh, video? Well, I'm going to have to view the video first before I decide what our next move is. And the whole thing disappeared. The girl wasn't arrested. She should have been. Why not? What's the deal with St. Louis?
In answer to your question, spineless government officials and afraid of, thank you, Police Executive Research Forum, this PERF, folks. Well, what will the public think if we made an arrest because they made a complaint? Well, so what? It would stop some of this stuff. I understand, David. I feel your frustration. Believe me. I feel it down to the bottom of my soul that these weak-kneed, spineless bastards who are in positions of power are putting the reins on folks. If it was you or I or Pittsburgh, David, they'd be locked up and be facing charges, and that would stop a lot of this crap. We're reaching the law of diminishing returns here. We try and placate these bastards and rub their butts and all that stuff, and it comes up with absolutely nothing. And it hurts. It hurts my heart, as I'm sure it does your both you, Davids, and Amanda, and everybody that's listening. But our weak-kneed, pansy-ass politicians who call the shots, basically, are totally afraid. Their feet turn to clay, their knees turn to rubber, and they run and hide and talk about all of the great things that we're doing and how great the Black Lives Matter movement is, and even the president praised them. Oh, my God. I just want to throw up. But, okay. Enough of that.
No, listen. You're 100% right. You know, I've always had an issue with this because I know coming out of New York, New York City especially, but New York in general, being as liberal as it is or can be, you know, we used to have this issue a lot with, like, rape cases. We had so many fake rape cases that we would get, especially as a detective that would come in. And we would, you know, not that rape doesn't happen, but 9 out of 10 of them that were reported to us, at least where I was working, were like, it wasn't rape. It became rape because dad walked in and found you having sex with your boyfriend he didn't know about, but your mom did. It all comes out in the wash when you do the investigation.
Sure.
Or you had an affair on your husband and you got caught because you're pregnant. Oops, I was raped. All this different type of stuff would go on. They would never lock up the woman on a false report. And they would say, well, that it's like you said, that was the district attorney's answer. You're going to prevent women from reporting rape. And I'm like, my stance was always that. I'm like, no, I'm going to prevent women from reporting fake rapes. not real rapes. I, as a detective, when I was assigned to what we called our BRAM unit, which was Burglary and Robbery Apprehension Module, and every squad had had one. They've since gotten rid of it, but when I was assigned to that and I was in the burglary aspect of it, I used to get a lot of people that would report burglaries, and I would charge them. Now, obviously, for burglary, they were okay with this, but I would charge them on a false report because they would come in and you'd interview. You'd go there, you'd look at the scene. They'd come in later with documents, and you'd interview them, and all of a sudden it's, well, $5,000 in jewelry was taken, $3,000 in cash was taken, a $2,000 TV was taken, an Armani watch was taken, my wife's $3,000 purse was taken. Before you know it, you got a $15,000 burglary. Reality is that someone came in through the fire escape, they took some costume jewelry, tossed a few drawers, walked out with your Xbox, end of story. I used to lock them up on a false report and on insurance fraud for padding the report. The ADAs loved it, thought it was a great idea. Everyone in my unit started following suit. I left the unit. The sergeant still had other people doing it. Listen, if they're lying, we're not saying it didn't happen, but you're making it from a smaller offense to a much larger offense. You're ripping off your insurance company. You're worsening the crime statistics for no reason. And you're doing it to steal from your insurance company. It is what it is. For me, it was good because I got to close out the burglary, and my boss was happy because we had a good closing rate and good arrest numbers. It was a win-win for everybody. But when you get to certain things like rape, or in this case, alleged police abuse, especially if it's under a racial circumstance, they become cowards.
They become cowards.
So how is it? The question becomes this. Do we mobilize people? Same like you just said with St. Louis, right? They had the car stop, and Black Lives Matter somehow got involved and heard. Obviously, the people stopped had to have told someone who told somebody who told somebody.
You got it.
At what point do we hear this, and then we mobilize by blasting Facebook, by blasting the department's Facebook, by blasting the local media, and demanding, as we, the public of the United States, have charges filed against these assholes for their false report? Or do we sit by as civilians and just let it go?
You know what? You're right, David. It would stop an awful lot of this baloney. The stop is, as I saw it on the car video, and a friend of mine knows these two guys, that the stop was handled very professionally, very calmly, and, you know, Sunday, going to church, two little kids, okay, just get your license squared away, sir, and boom. But you're right, you know, the baby mama told who knows what, and at each avenue it gets added to and expanded upon, and the next thing you know, you got these Black Lives Matters goofs in there, and you think they check anything out? Hell no, because they don't have to. They can get up and make a big production out of all of this bullshit, and nothing happens. And that's the sad part. And I agree with you. And you know, we'll talk politics a little later on the QT. But you know, maybe with this guy that's coming up, some of this shit will stop. We can certainly hope so.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And that's all we can do is hope that a changing of the guard, if you will change. But realistically, you know, and you know as well as I do, a lot of these changes actually need to be made at the grassroots level. They have to be made at the bottom up. This is not one of those policy changes that starts from the top down. Certain changes can be made from the top down, but you're not going to systematically reform this broken, twisted system from the top down. It's got to come from the bottom up, and we have to get the bottom layer done, built kind of like a pyramid scam, and then move them up to the next level and put in new people at the bottom, and then lift them up another spot and then put new people at the bottom. And that's how we're going to systematically change it, at least in my opinion. But that doesn't mean we can't pick and choose our battles, which is what I think we need to start doing and focusing on, at least in our group. There's enough problems with getting other groups to assist you whenever you do anything. So fuck the other groups that are out there. But I think our group as a whole, maybe we really do need to start reaching out to media and to stations and to police departments and politicians and say, hey, why is, you know, whoever the hell it was in this case, why are they not being charged? Why are they not being charged? Why are they not being charged with inciting a riot? By creating this story that gets this BLM down there, that creates this crowd, that makes for confrontation, that now that we found the video, we're all just going to go away with our head between our fucking, you know, whatever, head up our ass, I should say. Somebody should be held accountable and go to jail for it.
Yeah, they sure should. They need to be held accountable. You're damn right. But, okay, let's lower everybody's blood pressure here a little bit.
Yeah, tell me your funny story. Tell me your funny story.
Okay. I just pulled three of these out of my first book. It was called Shadow of the Arch. And I'm going to go ahead and set the table on this. This involved a tavern called the Threadneedle. It was in a black, ghetto type stuff. And it's a place where they always have problems. And this is a fictional police officer, Officer Steve. I'll just go ahead and read this. Officer Steve Baker proceeded by the most direct route to the Threadneedle, siren blaring. In many instances, this is enough to scare off the participants from whatever type of crime they're involved in. Not this time. Officer Baker threw his police car into a sliding stop in front of the bar and quickly entered the bar. It was easy to see the problem. There on the floor, near the bar, was an older black man with blood on the front of his tattered and torn light blue and well-worn shirt. It was a shirt of a man who'd not been dealt a very good hand in the game of life. The man lying on the floor was quite obviously dead. The patrons of the Threadneedle were stepping over the body on the floor and demanding gin drinks, gin and juice, as well as other gin and vodka concoctions. The jukebox was blaring at a level of noise coming out of the box, was nearing the threshold of pain. None of this seemed to matter to the patrons. Officer Steve Baker proceeded to the location of the jukebox and pulled the plug. The waning sound of, oh, baby, oh, came from the unplugged jam machine. Officer Baker then walked up to one of the bartenders that he knew from previous visits, Leroy Watkins. Hey, Leroy, what the hell happened here? Leroy pointed to a very large black man seated at the end of the bar. John Wayne Johnson shot the motherfucker, he said. Officer Baker then proceeded to the end of the bar and approached the man identified by Leroy Watkins as John Wayne Johnson. He then sized up the situation. John Wayne was a big, big man who obviously worked at some type of manual labor, like single-handedly replacing locomotives on railroad tracks. Steve Baker pulled his walkie-talkie from his front back pocket and then dashed the dispatcher if there were any cars available to assist. This appears to be a murder scene, Baker said to the 911 dispatcher. He could hear the dispatcher hit the tone button several times, frantically asking for any cars in service to assist 2933 at the scene of a possible homicide. He could hear other cars clearing their current calls and were now en route to his location. Baker approached John Wayne Johnson, who was calmly enjoying his beverage, a golden Cadillac. Hey, John, leave your hands up on the bar and let me know what happened, Baker said. Okay, man, said Mr. John Wayne Johnson. Baker began to pat down the hulking John Wayne Johnson and felt something familiar in the small of Mr. Johnson's back. Sure enough, he pulled a .38 snub-nosed revolver out of his waistband. The patrons of the fine establishment were becoming restless. Hell, it was Friday night, and they began to chant, if you don't want a party, get your white ass out. Baker was straining to hear the sirens approach. It seemed like an eternity. Man, I'm sitting here drinking my drink, and this motherfucker come up blowing that wine breath all over me. And I tell him, man, I told that motherfucker to quit blowing that old wine breath up on me, and I'll just be goddamn that motherfucker be steady blowing that wine breath on me. So I shot him, John Wayne Johnson said. So the moral of that story, boys, is don't be blowing no wine breath in nobody's face.
You know, wow. You know, but yet it is not shocking. Wow. You know, now that story can be completely made up. However, I believe it to be 100% true because I've actually gone to homicides and shootings that were over stuff just that stupid. Wow. Wow. Yeah, some, you know, and that's the best part, and criminals are so stupid because they even own up to it. You know, not only are you dumb enough to do it over someone's wine breath, but then you own up to it.
You know, people kill people over the silliest things. Hey, how about one from Pittsburgh, David?
Well, I got something similar to that. It was one that my father was involved in. This is when he was just a grade one detective. He was out on a homicide. Guy shot in the chest. They do all their investigative work. Well, to make a long story short, they find the guy that shot him. He only lived a block away from the victim. They arrest him. They interrogate him. Go through the whole nine yards. Bottom question was, my dad asked the guy, he says, just what prompted you to shoot this man? He says, well, that motherfucker owed me $2. He says, you shot this man over and killed him over $2. He says, yeah, he bought $2 and never gave the motherfucker back. He says, but you took a human life for $2. He says, that's not why I did it. He says, I wanted to make sure that motherfucker learned to pay people back.
Yeah.
We've got that here on that one. That's a good one. Yeah, I'm going to use that in my next book.
Yeah, that I like that too. I wanted to make sure he learned. I'm sure he did. Just thinking.
That's a good one.
Now,
your
news 11, this guy's 6 feet under. Yeah, guaranteed. He's never going to worry about having to pay somebody back. He's never going to borrow money again.
I want him to learn to be able to pay your bills, man. Hey, good one, David. Good one. Okay, ready for another one?
Yeah, go ahead. Well, yeah, go ahead. I'm thinking of
okay.
one. I'm actually listening to you, thinking of my own story. My story's not as good as you guys because no one died.
David?
Yeah, no. You go ahead. I want to follow something that you guys...
Okay, wait.
Yeah, no.
Wait, that statement is going to go down in less than history. Your stories aren't as good as mine because no one died. I'm sorry, that was awesome. That's less than history right there. I'm done.
Well, it's true. No one died in mine. Someone got their ass whipped, but pretty bad. Might have even wished they were dead. But no one died. So how am I going to follow up a homicide story with, you know, an ass whooping? I mean, let's face it. We're not talking about, you know, the goodness of the earth being taken from us when we're talking either by victim and or by perpetrator in these stories. You know, I gotta have something comparable. I mean, I have homicide stories, but yeah, not like that. Not like that. So, by all means, it's up to you. Your turn. You go. I'm listening. I'm ready.
Okay. And this one is also from my first book, Shadow of the Arch, and it's a bunch of police stories wrapped around two detectives, Sloan and Falamoso. So I'll go ahead and read this. And Sloan and Falamoso were getting the details of the situation from one of the patrol units. Actually, what had happened. Well, here, let me read this. The fourth person in the Crown Vic, Darius West, a tall, lanky, perpetual motion black dude, was hollering about his rights and that he had to get back to the halfway house at 11 p.m. and that the police had no right to stop him and his cohorts. Why is it always the littlest guy with the biggest mouth? In this instance, Mr. West refused to listen to Sal Varillo and was attempting to explain the reason for this, who was attempting to explain the reason for the stop and to question Darius West as to why he had a loaded weapon that was found under the driver's seat and what the deal was with the stuff in the baggies. Darius West would have nothing to do with any explanation or questioning by the man. Darius just didn't know when to shut the fuck up. It all happened in a flash. Darius was standing on the shoulder of the road making a scene about his constitutional rights and was refusing to cooperate in any way, shape, or form. In the next nanosecond, the 18-inch bicep of Officer Sal Varillo's right arm flexed as he grabbed the wheeling and flailing Darius West by the neck and with little effort flung Darius West over the top of the Crown Vic and into the third lane of eastbound traffic on I-171. Darius somehow landed on his feet and had the look of a deer in the headlights. He was. Oncoming traffic was thrown into disarray. The squeal of rubber on the pavement as a result of panic application of brakes could be clearly heard. Headlights were going in all directions, indicating the vehicle's movement in order to avoid the person standing in the middle of the eastbound lanes of I-171 at 7:45 p.m. on this lovely spring evening. What the hell was this guy thinking? Darius, in his herky-jerky motion, was attempting to make his way safely back to the shoulder of the roadway. Several of the cars on eastbound I-171 had their windows rolled down and were cussing and flipping off the individual who was attempting to navigate through three lanes of traffic. Darius made it back to the shoulder of the roadway and meekly confronted a seething Sal Varillo, who quickly spun the now compliant Darius West around and hand quick cuffed him in a motion reminiscent of a ballet dancer. Sal then placed Mr. West in the back of a cage car, Darius getting the message to shut the fuck up. Sloan and Falamoso, as the other four patrol officers, were thinking, how in the hell did that happen? What happened in this thing initially was these two coppers saw a car going down the roadway with one of these big monster TV sets tied down in the trunk, and these were guys that are at a halfway house, and they were heading back to the halfway house with the fruits of some burglary. And then this guy just threw this loudmouth prick out in the middle of a traffic. It's a wonder he didn't get killed. I was going, my God, how did that happen? And that's it. I got one more after you guys.
Okay. Dave, you got a follow up?
Yeah, actually I do. I had a guy years ago. The fellow's name, and I'll use his name because he's deceased, so I'm not worried about him. But his name was Michael Hickman. And I had arrested him for defying trespass, disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and so on and so forth. I'm done. He's in the lockup.
Wait, hold on. So you're telling me he was an outstanding citizen?
Oh, he was just a model citizen, let me tell you. He had a rap sheet three pages long. I mean, he outdid me, so apparently he's out there. But I'm waiting to, he never showed up for his hearing. So naturally there's a warrant issued for him. So I got a warrant out for him. I've been looking for him, not wholeheartedly because I got better things to do, but you know, if I come across him, I'm going to snatch him up. But I go down about a month later to meet my father for lunch down at the public safety building. And there's all these people from ID. There's a couple detectives down there talking with my father and they're all huddled around and me, the curious person that I am, kind of like weasel my way in. And here they're looking at a photograph from the coroner's office, a picture of a head, just a head. And I'm looking at it, and I was like, man, that's vaguely familiar. And all of a sudden, you know, and I said that out loud, but I was thinking out loud, didn't realize it. Then all of a sudden it just got silent, and they're all looking at me. I was like, he looks vaguely familiar. I says, I can't quite put my finger on it. And I said, where did you, you know, who is this? He says, that's what we're trying to determine. We found this head in a dumpster. I was like, okay. Well, what, you know as well as I do, you dismember somebody, the body parts are going to swell. There's going to be, you know, it's not going to look exactly like the person originally did when you saw them when they were alive. And something told me, go back to your clipboard. I had my three bind folder, and I opened it up, and I had Michael's mugshot in there. And I says, he looks so familiar. He almost looks like a guy I'm looking for. And they look at me, he says, what the fuck? You knew who this guy was the whole time? I says, no, I didn't know who this guy was the whole time. I said, it's not like, you know, I traveled through dumpsters and said, oh, okay, this looks like my guy. Then my father says, you know, excuse me. He says, I need to talk to him. And he takes me into his office and proceeds to chew my ass out. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. I says, you know, I didn't know who this guy was. I says, honestly, you're looking at a picture of a dead guy's head. I said, it's not like the guy was posing for a fucking picture.
No, not intentionally, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But, hey, at least it solved my situation. I didn't have to go to court on this asshole. The taxpayers didn't have to worry about him any longer. He's gone. He's famous history.
Perfect. Yeah, but you know what? Here's the problem with your story. He actually got over on you. Because by getting his head cut off, you lost the overtime from arresting him.
Oh, yeah. I lost probably a good 4 to 6 hours sitting in court waiting for my case to come up, because any time I went to court, I always made sure if I didn't have any place else to be, put all my cases at the bottom.
Absolutely.
Now, maybe you got some time to spend with your family. But, yeah,
like
that's
I said,
thing.
I want all my cases at the
You know, spending time with the family's nice, but it's if you have the money of the overtime, it makes it easier. Just,
it does.
You know, throwing it out.
It does. David, let's hear one from you. Come on, man.
Hi. Well, I don't have a severed head story. It's not a homicide story, but it was, it's a story I remember just because of the stupidity of it. So as a rookie cop, and, you know, it's one of those days. I'm covering our telephone switchboard / front window at the precinct. And like one of those things, it was like a Thursday. I just wanted it, you know, I wanted the night to end. I was going to meet up with the buddies afterwards, go to the bar. You know, we always went on Thursdays, so that's why I remember it was a Thursday. So it's a nice quiet night. Speak to the boss and like, listen, you got to do me a favor. I'm looking to go out and have a few tonight. I don't want to get tied up with anything. I said my activity's spot on. You know, which, of course, he knows because they keep track of it. I said, can you just do me a favor? No problem, no problem. My partner wasn't in. I was going to be riding with a senior cop, which means if anything came up, I was fucked and getting stuck with it. So I wanted a nice, easy night. So he's like, no problem. I'll put you on the switchboard. You hang out with the lieutenant, you know, and that's it. So I'm standing at the switchboard, and this guy comes in. This guy beat the shit. He's been like sliced with a razor across the face. He's bleeding all over the place. He's got bruises. His nose is busted. It's gushing. He's got snot and blood all over his chin. He's covered in blood. He's a mess. Comes walking in, and I'm like, okay, A, don't touch me, and don't even get too close to me, and B, what happened? You know, we get a chair. We put a chair down. He sits in the chair. He's like, I got robbed. I said, all right, where'd you get robbed? He gets robbed about 2 blocks from the precinct. Just happened, he ran to the precinct, so we put a call out on the radio. I got the switchboard, so I put a call out, what we're looking for. I can hear the sirens kicking in over the precinct. People are racing over, trying to get in the area, set up a grid, get it taken care of. All of a sudden, a foot post comes walking in the precinct with the guy, maybe like two, three minutes later. He goes, actually, the foot post was coming in for lunch, and sees the guy walking down the block at a precinct. He's like, holy fuck, dude, that's the description, the guy, the bag he stole. So lock the guy up. The beat cop's got the guy, no problem. He's going to lock him up for the robbery. The guy IDs his bag. He's like, yeah, that's my bag. He's like, I'm like, all right, well, it was a green, you know, it's a green and black. I remember it was like a neon green and black knapsack. So we're like, all right, well, you know, we got to ID what's in it. We got to, you know, whatever. So the guy's going through, and he's like, yep, that's my wallet. Yeah, that's my Walkman. Yeah, that's my thermos. Yeah, that's my this. That's my that. I'm thinking to myself, I'm sitting there, and the thermos is sitting on the counter now. He's IDing everything in it. Everything in it is his. It's not like the guy robbed him and put anything in the bag. So I'm like, that's your thermos. I'm like, what do you got a thermos for? What do you do? And it's like a lunch thermos, but it was like a kid's one. You know, the plastic ones with the screw-on cap. That it had some kind of like cartoon characters on it. I'm like, what are you doing with a fucking kid's thermos? See, he's doing his thing, and I'm like, you got kids? Nah, I ain't got kids. Yeah, talking to him. I'm like, you work? He said, yeah, you know, I do what I got to do to live. You know, I don't really work. I'm like, oh. He said, where were you coming from? Mom, I'm coming from my girl's house, and I'm heading home. So what the fuck you got a thermos for? When's the last time you worked? Oh, 3-4 days ago, whatever it was. It could have been a week ago. I don't remember what his response was to that. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. So I grabbed the, for whatever reason, I say, you know what, I'm going to grab this thing. I grab the thermos. I open it up. The entire thermos. Now, this thermos has to be about 12, 14 inches tall, you know, wide mouth, like a kid would take to school back when they used to take thermoses. Whole thing was filled with heroin, dexaheroin.
Yep.
So I open it up and I look at it, and as soon as I grab it and I pick it up, the guy starts stuttering. He's in the middle of talking to me about IDing stuff, and he's going through a list like, oh, that's my pen, oh, that's my, and I pick it up, and he's still telling me what's his in the bag, but he starts stuttering the second I hold it. So I crack the seal on the thing, and I open it up, and it's filled with heroin, and before I can say, ask him anything, I mean, literally, I can't ask him anything. I open it up, I see all the glassine envelopes, it's filled to the top. He turns around to me and he goes, no, that's his heroin that he put in my stolen thermos. And I look at the guy. And I'm like, what are you talking about? There's no heroin in there. It's empty. And I'm holding it. And he goes, it's empty? And I said, yeah, it's an empty thermos. So he turns around to the guy. Now, the guy's quite a distance away, but he's in the holding cell. And he turns around and screams at him, you motherfucker, I'm going to kill you if you don't give that back to me. I put it on the counter. We ended up locking him up, felony drug weight with intent to sell, which, of course, I mean, it was in Brooklyn at the time, so I think he was done. He was out of prison before I was done with paperwork, and the ADA dropped the whole thing to a misdemeanor. But when I tell you, shit, man, I mean, we're talking hundreds of glassine envelopes full of heroin.
That's a lot of money.
They let the whole thing go, hundreds of it. Yeah, but, I mean, it was just, you know, and it's why I always tell people, I'm like, make no mistake. Criminals are the dumbest people on the face of the earth. Black Lives Matter, all of them, they're all, you know, they're all fucking morons, and it is what it is. Because if they truly were intelligent, we wouldn't have jobs. We wouldn't. I mean, 99% of what we do, right, is, like you said, shot somebody and then, well, his wine breath. I mean, this is what it is, you know. This other guy wanted for warrants and whatnot, but does stupid shit to get. You got to really piss somebody off to get your head cut off. You got to really like work. That's work. You got to try. And then it was like this asshole. You could have kept your mouth shut. I would have never been able to pin it on you. Your bag was stolen property.
But yeah, they'll never let you down, David.
They don't. It keeps us employed. It's all good stuff. So that's the best story I got as far as
that's
along
a good
those
one.
Lines. But, yeah, it's just it shows the stupidity of the common criminal and the reason as to why we're still employed, but it's not as good as a homicide. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. That's a good story. I got one that's not a homicide.
I got one, too, that's not a homicide. It goes along the line of what David was doing. We're probably going back maybe 20 years. And auto theft division back home, very busy. I mean, let's face it, cars are stolen every second. But they had a really big rush on, I mean, they had picked up for some reason within a few months, and they couldn't get a beat on where these cars were going. Well, what ended up ultimately happening, there was a fire behind the one zone police station, the Fighting Fifth. And, well, it's very easy to put out because the fire department shared the station house with the police. So what do? They pull their truck out a little bit, go back behind the building, and they're putting out a car. Well, subsequently, after putting the car out, police are back there. They call auto theft division. They come over. Not only was that car stolen, but there were several others that were parked back there to be stripped right behind the police station.
That's pretty... Oh, listen, you bring up a... You bring up a funny story, a rookie story. Why is it always a rookie story? So we had this one day. I'm on a a post with my partner at the time. Oddly enough, my partner and I lived nowhere near each other, and it turns out we both now, I'm retired, he's not. He's gone up several ranks. I went the investigative route. We both live in the same town. We're about 4 or 5 blocks from each other. Our wives are friends, and our kids are in the same class together, just the way it turns out. But he was my very first partner coming out when we were in field training. We end up going to getting assigned to some bullshit post in this neighborhood that is, you know, it's crack houses, whore houses, the whole nine. It's a shithole area, of part of town. We're on the foot post, and I make this arrest, you know, and it was like a shot in the dark, but it was like a bullshit arrest, just looking to make some overtime, literally like 20 minutes before the end of my shift. Here comes this guy walking down the block, and he's carrying the running board from a customized van. And it's fucking one. It's like 1:40 in the morning, and here you are in a burned-out ghetto, and you're carrying this beautiful painted fiberglass, you know, 12-foot-long running board with fender flares built into it and all this and the wires for the lighting hanging down, and you're walking down the street carrying it. And I'm like, yeah, this doesn't fucking jive at all. So, you know, call a patrol supervisor, lock the guy up, criminal possession, stolen property, bring him in. The desk lieutenant wants to be a hump. Now, all of a sudden, the desk lieutenant's like, you can't lock him up for this because, you know, we have to prove it's in fact stolen. And I'm like, I'm not going to have a hard time indicting this on theft. We're in the middle of a fucking burned-out ghetto, and he's walking down the street, doesn't have a driver's license. It's 1:50 in the morning, 1:40 in the morning, you know, midweek, and he's carrying this running board. It's not going to. He's like, no, you're going to handcuff the prisoner, put him back in a patrol car, and drive around with him and, some, you know, take one of the other guys with you and find where it came from. So I'm like, fuck, I'm driving around. Meanwhile, now we tell the perp what's going on. So you think the perp would be like, fucking steer you in the wrong direction? Nope. Sure enough, this perp takes us right down to the south side where we were anyway, backtracks from where he was locked up to how he was walking, pulls up in front of the fucking bodega that he got a fucking Jamaican beef patty at, pulls up at the other bodega where he bought some Lucy's at, you know, whatnot, and all this other shit. Sure enough, there we go down the block. There's a fucking stripped van sitting down the block. As we turn onto the block, the headlights come around the turn and light up the very nose of the van sticking out of like an alleyway. And he turns around and goes, nope, that's definitely not the van I stole it from. Like, really? Sure enough, boom. Obviously, what do you know, we get down there, the van is stripped interior-wise. The exterior isn't so bad. But it is missing one running board that actually happens to be the perfect match to the one he has.
No.
So we unhandcuff him, and we bring him out. We take the handcuffs off and tell him, of course, that if he takes the other running board off and doesn't damage it and helps us load it into the patrol car, that we will return it to the owner, and maybe he won't get charged. So he, of course, feverishly climbs underneath the van as we're both standing there watching him. I ended up getting a sergeant to go out with me. I couldn't get another cop. There were no available units on the midnights. We watched this guy as he feverishly yanks everything out, loads it into the car. Of course, we have to handcuff you for our safety. So we handcuff him again, back in the car, take him back to the precinct, and bring it in and show it as evidence. This was just to piss off the lieutenant, as evidence to say, look, we got the match. And we were able to charge him on it, which he was really upset about because he worked so hard. And it came up in court, too. Did you uncuff your prisoner and ask him to remove the property and load it into your car? Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Good one.
And the attorney's like, okay. You got to be kidding.
That gives a whole new meaning to work release.
Yeah, right. It didn't. It made for a big joke in the courtroom. It was funny.
Yes, we all love defense attorneys, don't we?
Oh, yeah, like a plague.
Okay, I got a good one, and this is also from my first book, Shadow of the Arch. Let me set the table here briefly. There was a guy named Peanuts that me and my partner busted for gobs of marijuana plants in his apartment, and you'd walk up and look in the apartment. That's all you saw was marijuana plants, so we cracked him for cultivation, and there was an idiot defense attorney named Howlin' Ray Nixon, and he'd always howl at you, go, oh, so then what'd you do? You know, it's just an idiot. But let me just start this. Peanuts defense attorney was a loudmouth prick named Howlin' Ray Nixon. All the cops and prosecutors referred to him as Howlin' Ray because he would continually badger and howl at the witnesses for the state and attempt to intimidate them and trip them up. Dean Hogan, actually this guy named Dean Hogue, was a super-duper assistant U.S. attorney, would have nothing to do with it. When Howlin' Ray would start his ranting and raving and corny theatrics, Dean would vigorously object, thus earning him the reputation, the respect of all cops and most of the defense attorneys. Dean really liked prosecuting drug cases and was recently made chief of the narcotics prosecution unit. That was all Dean wanted. The jury selected in the early afternoon in a trial was set to begin the following day at 9 o'clock sharp. After the attorneys made their opening statements and the state began to put on its case, calling for the first witness, Detective Rich Falamoso. After Falamoso was sworn in, Dean Hogan walked through the process of the actions and activities that brought Peanuts to this court of law. Then Howlin' Ray got up and began his attempt to discredit Detective Falamoso by making outrageous claims. He inferred that Sloan and Falamoso had it in for his client and didn't investigate any other suspected cultivation marijuana at John Albert's apartment. That accusation was quickly was objected to by Dean and sustained by Judge Cactus Jack Murphy. Falamoso thought, what kind of a question was that? Peanuts was the only person in the apartment, and who else was there to investigate? What a dipshit. The frustration was evident as Howlin' Ray began to trip over his tongue. Peanuts was getting very nervous. He knew he was jammed up, straight up square business. The hour was approaching noon, and Judge Murphy called for an adjournment until 1:30 in the afternoon. Since Falamoso was testifying, the other detectives could not be in the courtroom and were waiting to testify in the witness waiting room. The four detectives then went to lunch. At 1:30 sharp, the trial resumed with Falamoso still on the stand. Howlin' Ray got up like the man possessed, approached Falamoso and said that he had observed the four detectives going to lunch. Falamoso agreed. What a dipshit. Of course we were going to lunch. Howlin' Ray then said that he saw the detectives talking and laughing as they were walking down the street. Falamoso agreed. What a dipshit. Of course we're talking. Howlin' Ray then said that we were talking about the trial. Falamoso disagreed. Howlin' Ray then demanded that Detective Falamoso tell the court what they were talking and laughing about. Falamoso said that he would rather not disclose the matter, smelling blood. Howlin' Ray absolutely demanded that Falamoso relate the conversation he had with the other detectives. Once again, Falamoso, smelling blood, said he would rather not discuss the matter in open court. Cactus Jack, the judge, getting a whiff of the blood, leaned over and said, "You may answer the question, detective." Howlin' Ray stood in the middle of the courtroom with his arms folded like an army general who had just defeated a tenacious and determined enemy. And Maggie Walsh was one of the detectives, a female detective, and Falamoso was on the stand, says, "Maggie asked me if you ask any intelligent questions, and I told them no."
That's not nice.
See, no homicides, just fun.
No, it is, and it is. I actually, you know what, I had one on the stand. I was on the stand once. I'm trying to think. It was a robbery. It was an armed robbery of a bodega. that was robbed, and then not really a bodega, it was like a fruit market, and a laundromat that was robbed. And so I get in the morning, there's a wrecked car in front of the precinct, you know, I look, I see crime scene, not crime scene, I see evidence collection is at the precinct, and I'm thinking to myself, whoa, gee, I hope it's nothing that I got to deal with. And sure enough, I go upstairs, and yep, it's something I got to deal with. It's this armed robbery, whatever, whatever, whatever. So we end up tracking down the owner of the vehicle and whatnot, and he's got a bullshit alibi. We do some work, we get some video, and sure enough, we're there. And we end up making the arrest, and the arrest, you know, goes to grand jury. The grand jury gives a true bill. The guy, you know, and then the trial starts. The whole process starts. And again, I remember getting on the stand, and I remember, you know, as always, defense attorneys asking a bunch of stupid questions. But I had this one defense attorney, that, you know, in this case, he turns around and he goes, well, detective, let me ask you this. Okay, ask me anything you want, counsel. He goes, why is it that my client, who's a very outstanding member of the community, of course, has a full-time job, makes good money with benefits. Why is it that you single him out as the perpetrator in the robbery? I mean, out of everyone in the world, you somehow end up going back to him. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, and again, this attorney, he could have been, like, filled in for the law firm and not really, it must have been the case. Must not have realized anything. Because I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, we covered the other day, we showed the video in court of the guy doing the robbery. The guy does the robbery, and he looks right up, because there was a sign on the wall that says, that said something, I don't remember the exact words, but it said something like, you know, warning, video surveillance or something like that, and had an arrow pointing to the camera. And you see the guy in the video, you see like kind of like the top of his head as he's doing the robbery, and he glances at the sign, he reads the sign, and his head follows the arrow up, and he looks straight into the camera. And you get a beautiful shot, full frontal shot, color of his face. So, you know, we went over it. Now, this attorney was in court. It's not like he wasn't in court and he missed the video. But I'm thinking to myself, like, the case might have been dumped on him. He's probably got a busy schedule. He's really not paying attention. Most of the time, if I'm talking, he didn't object to anything and he was busy writing notes. That's all he was doing, which, like, seemed a little weird. So he turns around and he goes, and it made everyone laugh. He turns around and goes, what makes you single out my client that everyone can single out? And I go, you know, I really can't answer that. And the judge is like, well, you have to answer it. So I'm like, no, I mean, I don't have an answer. I can't answer it. So he turns around and he goes, he looks at me and he goes, so you're trying to say that you have no reason? And I turn around to him as square as can be in the witness stand. And I said, counsel, no disrespect, but were you in fucking court yesterday? So the judge, of course, rips up. He's like, you can't curse. You can't strike that from the – I apologize, Your Honor. Forgive me. I've just never seen – never heard an asinine question like this. So I – counsel, were you in court yesterday? We played the video of your client, you know, doing the robbery. He looked right at the camera. So he turns around and he goes, you expect me to believe that my client is dumb enough to look at the camera when committing the robbery? I turned around and I said to him, well, he was dumb enough to hire you as his attorney. And, of course, I got ripped apart by the judge again. You can't insult the – and I apologize to the judge, and I know the judge. He's a great judge. He's still serving in Queens, but I'm like, you know, they ended up with a sidebar, and he called me to it. I had to apologize to the attorney. And then the judge looks at me later. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you were in court yesterday. What the fuck does this guy think he's talking about? But, yeah, counsels, lawyers are the worst, man. They are absolute fucking buffoons.
The criminal justice system suck because, you know, you're dealing with those kind of individuals. That's why the system doesn't always work.
You're absolutely right. And that's the worst. part of it, though. At least if you got what you know what you're talking about, but a case like mine, you know, or even again, like, what's the big deal that you saw them going to lunch and they were talking? What does that have to fucking do with anything? You know, I don't understand these people. They go to law schools, they spend a lot of money, they pay off a lot of student loans, and they're fucking idiots. But yet, they destroy life for the rest of us, right? One way or the other.
Yeah. Well, you know, along that line is what I can't understand is you've got these idiots out here that, you know, these defense attorneys, but then 6 months down the line, there's a new DA that might come in and is looking for some good ADAs or just, you know, their friends and bring them on board. And these defense attorneys end up becoming ADAs. Like, all right, and then 6 months ago, they come across one of these people that they've defended and saying they're just the best thing since sliced bread. Now, all of a sudden, you're saying that they're the scourge of society. It's like, wow, you flipped the script real quick.
Yeah, they do. I've seen it go the other way, too. I've seen it go the other way where, you know, they're public defendants, and I haven't seen it in my case, but I know one of my partners, he ended up getting a defense attorney on a case that used to be an ADA, and then started bad-mouthing him on the stand, saying, well, I remember when we worked as an ADA, you know, you used to do this, you used to do that. And I'm like, you know, there is no – when they say there's no honor among thieves, they were talking about attorneys. Just my opinion. I might be wrong, but I think that's what they were talking about.
I think you're probably right.
Well, that's about it. Anyway, listen, guys, we got through some of the stories, but – I do have to tell you, that being said, we're out of time. We are out of time.
Well,
and we're going
to
have to...
Amanda wanted to have a fun... would you consider doing this again at some point?
We're doing... Listen, Amanda wanted to do Fun Day Fridays, so that's what it is. We're going to tune in, and we're just going to have relaxed talk on Fridays going into the weekend, whatever it may be, funny stories, comical stories, whatever.
Okay.
You know, this is our new shtick. So we're still counting on you to come in and be a big part of it. You know, because Fridays is your day, and obviously we're more than anticipating Dave to call in because he's a part of the show. And hopefully next Friday we can get Chuck in, but I know we had a schedule change with a temporary position transfer. But hopefully we can get him to chime in, and we'll see how things go from there. But yeah, this is Amanda's baby. Although it's funny, she doesn't really seem to speak much during it. But it is.
Well,
her
today
baby.
today was Ellie's story, so I wanted you guys to take it for me.
But yeah, no, we did.
We did get an epic clip. I swear to God, I'm downloading this show, and I'm going to because it speaks to Ellie humor like nothing else. I don't have a funny story, but it's not as funny because no one died. That's freaking perfect.
Well, you know, it is. Listen, we have our own sense of humor, our own way of doing things, and that's what makes us the creatures that we are. Thanks for noticing. Download it. Make it a clip. It's fucking epic. That's good. But listen, that's it. So next week, though, Amanda, you got to do a little bit more chiming in. Even if it's just to laugh, because it's your show. As a matter of fact, I think next week you need to intro the show because it's your show.
Oh my
Bravo.
God,
throwing that out there. That's gonna be our thing. Yep, you gotta do it. That's gonna be our thing, Ken. So stick with us and stay with it.
Be careful what you wish for, you just might get it.
Yeah. Hey, listen.
Yeah.
Good show. Everybody, I enjoyed it. I'll dig up some more stories. As I was through these damn things, I saw one about the guy that bit the ear off. That's a good story. And we'll see you guys next week. Everybody be careful. Stay safe. Buckle up and wear your vest, everybody.
Sounds good. Absolutely, Ken. You enjoy your sunshine, and we will speak to you next week. Dave, thank you for chiming in. Amanda, thanks for letting us know you're there. For Man in the Switchboard, love you all. Speak to you all later.